Blog Talk Radio.
Tell my baby, make it hot. Ride the cock till you hit the spot. Tell my baby, make it hot.
Doing the doggy style. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo, yippee-yay. Wow, 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 yippee-yo, yippee-yay, bow, wow, yippee-yo,
Greetings. Professor Val here, and I'm hooking the old doc up now. Here we go. Are you there?
I am present.
I hear you.
Oh, pistol pecking mama. Wow.
That
I don't even
cool.
know what to say.
Uh-huh.
Nature has taken its course.
Yeah, yes.
And we are here on a July night. Isn't it July? Yeah, the 9th of July, actually. The hell do I know?
You sound like me today.
Oh, I'm just so loopy. The stress is... The summer stress has hit. We're getting to accommodation point, thank God, next week. We actually get used to this garbage, but... It has been intensamente.
Mm-hmm.
So, anybody else accuse anybody else of having an affair, or is the world pretty
probably.
Much stable right now? Probably, yeah. Wait 5 seconds, and we'll see. But wow, it's been a pretty interesting week of soup to nuts when it comes to that stuff. I don't even know where to start. Who's in rehab? Christy Brinkley's case. Did you check that out yesterday, by the way?
I did not.
Oh, my God. The lawyer for, I forget the husband's name, King or something. Forget his name. Francis Scott Key. I don't know. It's got a name. Anyway, the lawyer has to cross-examine Christy Brinkley, right? And
uh-huh.
He basically asks all the barracuda questions you could imagine. And it becomes very clear about halfway through the interview, the cross-examination, that, little Philo Christy Brinkley is going to basically break down and cry, and that was the whole point of the interrogation, so to speak, to show that she's unstable. And then he pronounces that both sides really need therapy. And I just thought of you. I had like a flash. I was like, who doesn't need freaking therapy? I mean,
yeah,
it's
I'd
like
to
this,
meet that person.
I want to know who is qualified to not need therapy on this planet. I think we should all be assigned that. Two parents and a therapist, right when you get on the planet.
That'd be
welcome,
nice.
Welcome to Earth. You'll be eating this couch. I swear, it's almost like people think that somehow therapy is like the turnstile to normalcy.
Yeah, it's not. It actually just makes the therapist crazy. Take a look at me.
Yeah, s'il vous plaît.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to be basically taking a little tour of the inner architecture of the ego tonight, as we last couple weeks have been a little serious for us, I guess. You know, looking at things like Stephen Hayes' work with his act and commitment therapy, and last week we took a big steak knife to the gut of chiropractic,
mm-hmm.
and looked at that stuff, the limitations of meta and things like that.
That was interesting.
Yeah, I guess so, for the five people that cared to listen. You know, but tonight, I have no way of getting this switchboard up, by the way. I can't see what's going on yet.
Oh, no? All right. Mine seems to be okay for the moment. And by the way, we're having some weird weather up here, so if I disappear suddenly...
Yeah, I know. I know. Well, I know the drill.
Holding the bag.
I'm gonna switch over to Mozilla and see if I can probably move over there. It's been interesting... computer-wise this week with the atmosphere. So anyway, we're going to be looking at the intersection of sports and entertainment and all the sort of the frothy backstage kind of stuff that goes on, not so much with the athletes, but with the announcers and the personalities and everything that we sort of look to for sources of entertainment. Did you catch the fact that Access Hollywood has the inside scoop with the Obama family? They have like the little interview they did with the first time the whole family's been interviewed together. Well, it comes through Access Hollywood, none of the major networks. Yeah, that Brian Williams sitting down with them. It's some chickadoo.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, I think we've gotten, let's look at it this way. if something happens these days, who knows about it first, the tabloids or the major media outlets? I mean, it's pretty much at this point the blogosphere and all the things that are sort of intersecting with it. There is no TV, radio, you know, industry that's separate. Everything's sort of intertwined. So basically, like, you go all the way back to Monica Lewinsky, right, with the, what's his name there, the Drudge Report. You know, he was a little hack sitting in his apartment with his underwear on his head, and he was talking about, stains on a dress, and everyone went, hoo-hoo, oh, it's a tabloid thing, and it turned out to be real.
Uh-huh.
You know, and it goes both directions, because you see how Madonna's brother happens to be coming out with a tell-all book, and she has a tour coming out. At the same time, she stirs up all this controversy about her and A-Rod, which then she completely, in unto fashion, throws everybody under the bus. He's not. He's just my friend. I have no relation. Poor A-Rod, the Philo. It was like watching like a train wreck in slow motion. You know. Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. He's got two Antos. He's got C-Rod and he's got Madonna, right? Well, he's not swinging from stripper to stripper, okay? The Philo hump. So he has this kid after this whole controversy last year, you know, with the stripper in the Toronto, to basically sort of Kobe Bryant his way out of it. You know, Kobe was smart. He's an Anto. He just gave her a ring. Philo Jones gives her a baby.
Mm-hmm.
And neither one of them seems like they wanted this kid. At least they don't act like it. It's almost like it's become part of the chattel now. It's become part of the property, of the estate of the Rodriguezes. So long story short, the kid's born in April. A-Rod shows up 10 minutes after the birth, stays for 10 minutes. I don't know if he signed autographs for the orderlies, and then he's gone to a party with Madonna. And this whole Kabbalah thing comes up. And if you ever want sheep, you look for Philos, because they will follow the leader. And I'm telling you, I mean, if you're going to start a cult or a religion or a movement or anything, don't you need celebrities to endorse it? So,
yeah,
uh-huh. You know, Scientology has their Tom Cruise and Madonna has this, but I don't really care. I don't really care if it works for them or if they're seeing the world through some enlightened eye. I don't really care. That's all personal. The public aspect of it is woo-woo, like we were talking about. What did Stephen Hayes call it? Woo-ha or something like that?
Yeah, I think that's what it was.
It's too woo-ha. So it's like, what the hell is he talking about? So you now have a little bit of an eddy going on because, of course, Guy Ritchie is not like, you know, Joe Caballa, but he had a kind of cop to it to deal with what's-her-face with Madonna there. So this whole thing's swirling around. Now, like I said, in a parallel reality, in the reality that we live in, this media world, you have the brother writing the tell-all book and you have a tour coming out. So it's almost like the dominoes are lining up. And if he can, and you know her fixation with Marilyn Monroe, right? About Madonna,
no.
Right? Big
oh,
fixation,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Big
yeah,
fixation
yeah, yeah.
with Marilyn Monroe.
So, you can tell.
Yeah, and then the whole Joe DiMaggio thing comes up this weekend in one of the papers, comparing him and her and Joe DiMaggio and Marilyn Monroe. So anything that she loves to work the archetypes, DeSanto, loves them. And then everything happens. Cynthia files for divorce, and then the day after she goes, nothing happened. Well, where was that last week?
Oh, God.
This is really funny.
Well, what do you expect?
Again, this is the point of the. I don't think expecting it is gets you a booby prize.
No.
I think actually not expecting it gets you the booby prize. And the thing is, if you become savvy and sort of jaded about it, like most New Yorkers are, you know, and people in any media capital, they kind of know what the game is on both sides of the coin. It's almost like going to watch a magician, and you know it's an illusion, but you still clap when the rabbit comes out of the hat out of courtesy. But once that wall, once that fourth wall, we'll talk about that with our guests hopefully in a minute, once that fourth wall comes down and that illusion is no longer going to kind of light you up and make you feel like you did anything special, then you're almost in that kind of in-between world of, you know, what gives these personalities, these messengers, you know, whether they're news media or whether they're gossip pongers or whether they're columnists or even if they're bloggers, the bloggers are coming. Even if it's, you know, at any point in that spectrum, what gives them the authority to tell me the truth that I'm perceiving from all these different angles. I got to assemble it. It's like it comes through, you know, all these different factions. You can't, I mean, can you believe anything at all when it comes to, you know, these personalities? Everything is manufactured. That's what I'm saying. It's like, at a certain point, do you even have to pay attention to it? Or do you just get, you know, it's just like candy. You don't look for nutrition from it. You just look for pleasure.
Yeah, I barely pay attention.
Oh, I can't look away. I'm the opposite of you. That's a train wreck.
I know you.
I can't look away. No, I can't look away. Because I'm watching it. I'm trying to say, okay, when all the cameras shut down for the day and, you know, Lindsay Lohan's mother goes back to her kitchen table, does she put her head in her hands and go, holy cow, what the hell's going on? Or does she go, next? I don't know. I don't know what. So hopefully some of our guests here will be able to kind of sidle us through that world, because
that'll
I know from working with entertainers over the years, you know, personally in the practice here, that there's definitely a side to every artist that they don't want the world to see. I mean, it's one of the reasons why they are creative people, is that they have a very deep, rich, dark side.
This is true. Hey, have you gotten your switchboard up?
I'm journeying.
Well,
we have anybody
up? Yes, we do. We've
it's
got
9/11.
Two.
We got two?
Mm-hmm.
All right, let me sidle in there. I'm just this damn thing.
Okay.
I'm over on the slow side of the train here with the...
Yeah, I know.
With the Mozilla.
Mm-hmm. Well, everything's working fine over here for now.
Well, let's punch them in and see what we got.
All right. Let's get to, here we go. There's one and two. Okay, we got
it. All right, mystery guest, vocalize.
Mike Silva,
hey.
How you doing?
Oh, Mike Silva. Okay, there you go.
Mike Silva's there, and then we got, was that Harry?
Yeah. No, this is A-Rod.
I just
happened to catch your show, Mark, and I just wanted to comment. I was listening intently.
Okay, man. So we have Hank Bavarian, alias is A-Rod, Stay-Rod, whatever they call him today, and Mike Silva from New York Baseball Digest.
They're calling me Pay-Rod now.
Pay-Rod, exactly. He's going to be paying through every orifice is what they're going to be calling him.
Yeah.
Wow.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm in a stew of shit. You might want to say that, but I don't know. I need help. I need insight. I know. I want my wife to come back.
Really? You want to get back with Cynthia at this point? You're ready to
reconcile here? I want C-Rod to have the understanding that she can be with me 100%, and I want to be 100% for her, for her children, for our children.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, she should allow me to cheat, because this is the nature of man.
Really? You're copying the biological argument that monogamy is basically an idealistic thing. It's impossible.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, especially when there's three strippers hanging off, yeah.
I mean, I gave her a luxurious lifestyle or her life.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I brought in $475 million over the course of my career. And here she's just, you know, she's just demanding that I'm faithful to her. Whereas she's, you know, she's a good-looking woman and she's a good mother to my children. But at the same time, I feel like I have the right to enjoy anything I would like to enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, just, Mike, from the baseball side of the coin, they had a stat in the paper, I don't think it was Sunday or Saturday, about every time A-Rod's been implicated in some type of controversy, his performance on the field has actually gone up. So maybe this is a trend for him. Maybe he needs to go hog wild here. What do you think?
He still doesn't hit in the clutch, so I don't know. I mean, whether he's in the papers with Madonna or he's feuding with A-Rod, he still doesn't hit in the clutch. But, hey, I got a question. Why Madonna?
Yeah.
I mean, I could see you or I. Listen, I could use a sugar mommy like that, but
she's a hooker.
I mean, I don't get it. He's 32 years old. Like you just said, he's made $500 million in his career. He certainly doesn't need her money.
Wouldn't
he have picked a better celebrity to go after?
She's a mother figure to me. She's a cougar.
She lured him in on the Kabbalah side, on the spiritual angle, basically chicken-hawking him, it seems. And then, like I said, as soon as there was anything real happening, like the lawyers came out, she issues a statement that says, I got nothing to do with this guy. Now, you know, basically, you're talking about spilled milk at that point, because we've got all kinds of a paper trail leading back to the birth of his child that said that he basically had abandoned, you know, Cynthia. You know, I mean, you go back to last summer with the chickadee up there in Toronto.
Yep.
I don't know how he got out of that.
Yeah.
He's been,
Mark.
Yeah.
Mark, I have a confession to make. I'm actually not A-Rod. This is Harry. My name is
yes,
Harry.
Yes, I understand. Harry Bavarian, basically deadpan, yeah. Going into the A-Rod spiel there, joining us from Electric Eel Entertainment. Now, you guys have basically a different perspective on a lot of these things that happen in the media because of your background. Now, Mike Silva, New York Baseball Digest, you know, hardcore baseball guy. I mean, basically all the way over there, one end of the spectrum, focusing on the event, focusing on what happens on the field. And Harry is sort of a cultural observer, and his basic take on things is everything can be possibly, no matter what happens, and even if it's a natural disaster, there's some entertaining scintilla of information that I could pull from this. So this is almost
sort
like
of
you guys.
Humor.
Yeah, you guys fit. When something lands like right in the middle of these two worlds, of sports and entertainment, it's sort of a feeding frenzy for all sides of the media, and you go up and down the dial whether you're talking. On the gossip side of the coin, or whether you're talking even sports talk radio, and we're going to get into that hopefully a little bit more. Does the public buy into these stories as much as they used to? Do you think that we're sort of worn out, or do you think that they can't
no.
get enough of it?
They love it.
It depends. I think I'll tell you why. I think it depends. Do I think the casual fan or the non-baseball fan loves it? Sure. I mean, you know, my wife, who is not exactly the biggest baseball fan. You know, mentioned it. The hardcore, like you said, like myself, you know, it's amusing. I enjoyed reading about Paul Laduca's exploits a couple of years ago.
Right.
But I'm more interested in what's going on in the field, and that soap opera, which, you know, there's almost a soap opera within a soap opera. I think what this does is it brings the casual observer to, you know, learn about A-Rod, but I don't think any of them are going to necessarily watch more Yankees games now because he's, you know, hanging out with Madonna
yeah.
and on and so forth.
I agree, absolutely not. I have nothing to do with baseball. I don't watch baseball. Even though my father was a minor league baseball player, it doesn't even matter to me. And I've been enjoying the salacious details, and I thoroughly enjoy it because it gives me a license to cheat on my wife. And
there
to,
you go.
And to enjoy.
You could just point, hey, if A-Rod says it's okay, you know. Well, we were just talking before you guys got here about the whole Christie Brinkley trial. When you have these public trials like this, yeah, that's another theater. Like I said, it's almost like from the standpoint of the fan, and you talked about a sports fan versus someone who's kind of a gossip hound. You take something like Deadspin, website Deadspin, that Bob Costas, if we can ever get the switchboard up. Do you have a switchboard, Val?
Yeah. Let me see. Hold on a second. Yes, actually.
Okay. Bob Costas had an HBO special about maybe a month and a half ago. Had a whole bunch of personalities from all over the sports media talking about the sort of the nature of the dialogue, that it's gotten very hostile and very sort of you know, negative in terms of the way that fans talk about the booing at games and everything else that's going on. And basically the paparazzi always they had that, you know, all the way back to Sean Penn, you know, with that sort of love-hate relationship with the media. And the Deadspin angle was that basically the blogosphere is a bunch of pinheads that are just up there and ranting. And they were talking about, I think it was, what's his name, Sean something. Sean Salisbury got fired from ESPN, and Bob Costas read the entry on Deadspin about his departure. So, Val, if you could just punch up Bob for us here. We have to play him every week. So.
Okay. Wait a second. Just trying to fix something.
Just listen
here.
To Bob,
right.
Bob's diction here. It's great.
All right. And hold on. Oh, here it is. Here it is. This might be too loud. Let me, oh, he was low. All right. Here we go.
Good riddance, fuckface.
Mm-hmm.
So long, you fetus-faced windbag. Good luck managing a Denny's douchebag.
Okay. Now that's the great Bob Costas. He's hosting the Olympics. And I'm just, you know, and I'm just saying, but Mike, if your image of Bob Costas is pretty much when the game ends, he disappears and he reemerges when there's a, you know, a desk to anchor, right? I don't perceive Bob Costas as even ingesting food. I think he just materializes when there's a game and goes away. But as we've learned over the years, I mean, Marv Albert had his little dalliance off to the side,
sure.
right? I mean,
sure. lost his job because of it too. Got it back, but lost his job, if you remember.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, and if anyone's not familiar with it, Harry might be.
Every man is cheating. Every married man is cheating. If he's not cheating, in reality, he's cheating with his eyes, which is the same thing.
Oh, the cheating with the eyes thing, eh?
Yeah.
So I think it's interpreted.
I lick more girls' asses on the subway train every morning than there are gummy bears in a pack of gummy bears. I mean, listen. The bottom line is what A-Rod has done was completely legitimate, and the same thing with Peter, whatever, of Christie Brinkley fame. And although I feel sad for him that he had to pay $300,000 for that spoiled little, stupid little teenager. And
The Spitzer thing. Yeah, that's another one. The politician.
No, not Spitzer. And that's another thing. So, no, I'm talking about Peter and with Christie Brinkley's issue.
Him. Yeah. Well, okay. Yeah, that's the hush money. That didn't quite work out.
Yeah, it was very effective hush money, was it? Was it not?
Well, yeah, exactly. I mean, Spitzer was a perfect example. He gets done in by the prostitution ring that he was prosecuting. I mean, it's just that he can't make it up.
So,
Mike, I mean, you're dealing with a lot of things, off the field issues that affect somebody's on field performance, whether it's a contract dispute or in the last couple of weeks we've had, Sean Chacon, knocking down the GM and Manny's incident with the traveling secretary down in Tampa, knocking that guy on his butt because he didn't get 16 tickets for him. And then, of course, that's written off as Manny being Manny because he's Manny. And Sean Chacon is basically a fringe player. He's out of the league and he has a grievance file, but he's basically, he's not with the team anymore. So do the same rules apply in sports to
uh-oh.
I'm here.
Hold on a second here. Oh, yeah. Do the same rules apply in sports that would apply to other industries when it comes to this? Like, is there a pecking order? Does the star player and the star salesman get the same sort of, like, Manny being Manny kind of treatment? Do you see that in your industry?
I'll tell you what. I have a day job. I'm in sales. I'm in management. And I can assure you that if I did what Sean Chacon did in my job, I would be unemployed right now. It is pretty amazing. When you have a skill that, I mean, just, there's 800 baseball players in professional baseball, divide that into, just the millions of people that are out there. You have a special skill. People are a little bit more tolerant when you behave badly. I'll tell you what, I don't think the fans care as much about bad behavior if it means winning. But you are seeing the worm turn a little, Mark, and I think you're seeing that with Barry Bonds. A lot of Mets fans were asked, would they put Barry Bonds in their outfield because of all the injuries they've had? Mm-hmm. And I think they did a poll. Over 70% said no. They didn't want to deal with him. Now, if this Barry Bonds from 10 years ago, would it be the same thing? I don't know. But the worm's turning a little bit where I think, fans want to be able to, I guess, like to some extent who they're rooting for. And winning will cure a lot of that. But I'll tell you what, I've had a hard time. If I was a Yankees fan, I'd have a hard time. I've never liked A-Rod. I mean, I've been on the air. I've said it. I've never liked A-Rod. He does a lot of things statistically. I think he's divisive for a team. He wasn't bad to me when I met him in spring training, but I don't deal with him day in and day out. So, that's not really the best example. But just from what I've read about him, he's not a guy that you want to root for. He's not someone I want to see. Yeah, I don't want to see him win a World Series.
You don't have any homosexual feelings for him? Or?
No.
The old man love thing that I forget who it was.
I wouldn't be happy to see A-Rod holding up a World Series trophy. It would be almost like, the rich getting richer type of deal, It's like, you couldn't carry your own team in Seattle, so now you're trying to go to what, quote-unquote, is the best team to win. And, I've actually enjoyed seeing him struggle a little bit because, again, I just think he's a guy that's about himself, his image. And, I mean, is this example that you've seen him die? And there's nothing, it's a perfect example of the kind of person you're dealing with. He's pretty transparent.
This is the first time that he's been a sympathetic character to me because he's got two women basically, beating the crap out of him in public, and he's still trying to play. And it was 2 years ago when they were booing the crap out of him at Yankee Stadium. I think he would just, like, disintegrate, but he seems to be holding his own right now. And unlike a Roger Clemens, who a year ago was basically treated like the second coming at Yankee Stadium,
and now
he can't take the four train past it. So I think we have Sid Rosenberg on the line. Is he there?
Gentlemen, how are you guys?
Hey, that's it. All right. Wow. From 790, the ticket, and some phone undisclosed location. Wait, you're in the car?
No, I'm actually, I apologize. I'm going to pull over here in a second. I'm walking on 86th and Broadway. Just had a great dinner at Carmine's on the Upper West Side. I'm walking back to my hotel room, so I apologize for the street noise here in New York. But it's authentic. It makes the show sound even better, if that's possible, by the way.
We should all be outside. I can go on the roof, and we could all be outside, get a little traffic going here. But we've been kicking around somebody's...
Huh?
Does he have any calamari for us, ask him?
Any calamari, any doggy bag going home there, Sid? You clean the plate.
Guys, we got nothing left. I was there. My wife, my brother-in-law, my two nephews. We got a steak for two. We got penne alla vodka. We got some chicken stuff I had. And it was just, it was $300, and it was, but it was all worth it. It was great.
Wow, so
send the bill to Mark Chernoff.
There you go.
Yeah, I don't think I can do that anymore. I did that for a lot of years, guys, a lot of years.
Well, in case you joined us late, we've been basically peeling the bodies off of the proverbial bus that has been claiming the public lives of, you know, Christy Brinkley and, of course, the whole A-Rod thing, Madonna thing. And Sid comes from this, we've been talking about the merger of sports and entertainment. And Sid's show down there in Miami, basically, he doesn't have those barriers up like a lot of the sort of the niche shows do. You talk about Mike's show on the New York Baseball Digest, which is really for the baseball fan, and then these controversies happen that sort of detract from the game, the steroids, all the things on the outside. Where Sid was one of the first guys that actually talked like a fan on the air, I mean, when he's up here in FAN, and basically said, I don't care about the steroids. I don't care about that. I don't care. I just want to see the game. So it was like it was almost like the cat was out of the bag once that happened, because it used to be 10, 15 years ago, sportscaster never admitted he was a fan of any team. He couldn't say that he was a fan because, oh, my God, the people would know that I'm a Mets fan or a Yankee fan. And now it's like open season. Everybody's – Beningo, for example, I mean, every day he's having a coronary on SNY about whatever the Mets are doing. So, Sid, how do you think the industry's changed, you know, in the last maybe even 5 years as far as the messengers, as we were calling them before, being open and honest with the audience and has the audience responded? Do you think that's the way it's going to go?
Well, New York is a lot different, guys, than any place else. You know, down in Miami, my show is I'm on a sports station, but, you know, I can literally, there was a day a couple of weeks ago where I interviewed Jim Nantz about his new book, one segment. The next segment, they had Mike Barnicle on talking about the death of Tim Russert. And the segment after that, I had Kevin Frazier on Entertainment Tonight talking about Lindsay Lohan. So, you know, in New York, you don't have to worry about that. That's what I love about working up here. You know, when I used to get to work at the Fan, once the IMAX show was over and the midday show started, before me and Jody or me and Beningo even went on the air and did the first segment, every single phone line was already lit. They knew what they wanted to talk about. It's not like that in most other cities, like that in New York, Chicago, and Philadelphia. But in a place like Miami, my show is not just about sports. I do a lot of political talk. I do a lot of entertainment talk. But up here, you're right. It's more about, you know, the fans are passionate. The hosts are passionate. Part of the reason why Joe Beningo has been so successful is the fact that he's a diehard Mets fan and Mets fans love him. Part of the reason why Chris Russo, the dog, has been so successful is that he's a Giant fan and Mets fans love to hate him or Yankee fans. So up here, that works. I root for the Mets. I root for the Giants. But in most cities around America, you can't go on the air and take 3 hours of baseball calls. It's just not going to work.
Right, right. And the thing is, like I said, we were talking before, but what's the boundary? Like, how much would a topic like A-Rod's divorce case come up on Mike's show, you know, New York Baseball Digest, talking about something that's supposed to be about the game, the direction of the team? It takes over to me, and you can't ignore it. When you're trying to talk about, you know, you got trading deadlines coming up, you got an All-Star break coming up.
Stats are boring. Baseball stats are completely boring and completely meaningless. And the bottom line is I think that baseball is an incredibly boring sport. It should not be watched and should be ended immediately. As an American pastime, we should stop watching sports and we should focus on reading the Quran, because we got to find out who our enemy is.
Oh, you know, that's kind of funny. You know, but the whole baseball thing, when I was a kid, baseball was far and away my favorite sport. You know, I remember, I tell this story quite often. Yeah, I know. No, I know it's going to sound cliche, guys, but I remember very vividly being 6 years old, 1973, and walking into a barbershop on Avenue U in Brooklyn with my dad, and there were three guys in the back room, something went out of Goodfellas. They were sitting there smoking cigars, and I remember like it was yesterday, Wayne Garrett was at the plate, and Vida Blue was pitching for the Oakland A's, and Garrett hit a home run. As it turns out, by the way, that was his only hit that day. He struck out about four times, and you guys know the rest. The Mets lost that World Series in 7 in 73. But the point is, as a kid, it was my favorite sport. As I've gotten older, the NFL for me now is my cup of tea. But baseball is still right there. I still love the game. But the difference with A-Rod is that's a guy and that's a story that transcends the game. I mean, that's a guy that the 35-year-old woman that never heard of David Ortiz knows everything about Alex Rodriguez because of Madonna. So, guys, I can't believe not a good for the game, because that will draw interest. There will be people who are not baseball fans who will tune into a Yankee game now just to see Alex Rodriguez. And if you don't think baseball loves that, you're being naive.
No, that's what I'm saying. I think there's a certain spectacle, a certain entertainment value, a theater to it,
that, you know, that's why this whole thing with Barry Bonds, you know, floating around the last couple of days. Maybe, Mike, you can break a story here. Is he going to go to the Diamondbacks or what?
You know what? I don't even think that. I think that was just writers trying to generate talk. Ryan Church goes down, has a concussion. I think it might have been Dave Lennon of Newsday asked Omar, you know, Barry Bonds, and Omar said no, but they were trying to be like you, Dr. Mark. They were trying to read his body language to see if no meant yes. And Omar's body language is kind of like out there. I think he needs some lessons from you. But again, I don't know. From a baseball standpoint, I think it's just, again, there's a lot of competition now. I mean, look at what Sid's doing. He's had to diversify his show. And but I'll tell you what, I went to Sid's new website. I was actually pretty impressed that he had the guts to diversify. I'll tell you what, Sid, your former employer needs to start diversifying, because if Mike and Chris break up, they're in a lot of trouble. And I think you read a lot of the message boards. You know, the fans aren't completely happy with the roster out there on talk radio, especially the hardcore sports shows. They could probably use a little shakeup. They might want to bring you back.
Well, I love Mike Silver, by the way. How are you, buddy? Thank you.
Good. How you doing, Sid?
I'm good, buddy. Thanks. I don't know if that's ever going to happen, but, you know, Mark Chernoff is a very, very, very smart radio guy. Everybody I talk to, I've always told, not just because we're friendly, and we still are very friendly, and I still talk to Mark Chernoff quite a bit, to be honest, but he's a very, very smart guy. The writing is on the wall. You know, everybody knows what's going on here. Neil Betts seems to have a story every single day. I don't know if these guys are going to break up tomorrow, in 6 months, in 2 years. I don't know. You know, I haven't talked to Mike or Chris about it, and they wouldn't talk to me anyway. But I think the writing is on the wall here. I'm not sure that I think they'll be back in September. I really do. But I don't think there'll be any more contract extensions. I don't think Mike and Chris have to resort to something like this to get more money or generate publicity. This is something Craig Carton or Sid Rosenberg does, not Mike and Chris.
Well, I think, like I said, that this is what I'm saying, that the messengers themselves have a loyal audience. You know, there's people that are pro-Chris and people that are pro-Mike, and just like they'd be fans of teams, they're fans of these types of personalities, and there seems to be a lot more drama queen stuff going on behind the scenes in those industries, just like there would be in entertainment, like with Harry's Field and his work with, like, the Howard Stern migration from terrestrial to satellite radio that damn near caused gridlock in the city when he left. And you see the way that the landscape's changing. All these mediums basically are interactive. I mean, now they've got poor Beningo. He's got to be dealing with the video cameras in his studio every morning because now they got the cameras in there. It's like you can't escape. It's like there's that.
It's because of the media.
Mediums, yeah.
I believe it's because of the technology.
Yeah?
Well, it is the technology. I think you're right. And I don't know why you'd want to escape, but I know, you know, Joe is still a very, very dear friend of mine. In fact, I spoke to him twice already today, and he's in his mid-50s, and, you know, he's kind of set in his ways. But, you know, Mike Silver was just talking about my website, which is www.sidrosenberg.com, which I update every single day, and there's all kinds of stuff on there, from sports to politics to polls. And I just got to tell the guys out
right.
I just got to tell the guys out there that, you know, to just kind of push it aside like it doesn't exist. Yes, Mike and Chris can get away with it because for 18 years they've been the industry standard. Yes, Joe Beningo can get away with it. But I have a feeling that Chernoff and the powers that be at the Fan know what the future holds. And stuff like that, the blogging, the instant messages, being interactive with your audience. It just can't be Bruce from Bayside and Joe Patton every single call. They're going to have to find a way to get more people involved. And I do think that the hosts will evolve as the market does.
Yeah, I mean, think about this, guys. There's actually a message board that talks about sports talk. Would you ever? I mean, Sid, when you start in this industry, do you ever think there'd be a message board that talks about what you do for so many hours a day? I mean, when it first came out, I thought it was goofy. But when you read it, it's actually there are people who sit all day and critique sports shows. And I mean, just goes to show you.
I just think that it's sad that technology is so infiltrated our meat that it's taken baseball away from baseball. It's taken, the bottom line is, if there had been a New York Post in Babe Ruth's day or YouTube in Babe Ruth's day, then we would have discovered his fondness for small boys, and that would have been the leading story about Babe Ruth.
The bottom line is whether you like it or not, and, you know, Beningo often talked about this when I worked with him, that he hated the fact that there was a band. Bon Jovi played before opening night of the NFL. He hated the fact that the halftime show was 45 minutes. He goes, I just want football. He hated the fact that ESPN started doing stuff in, around the cribs of the athletes and all that type of stuff. And the bottom line is, guys, that is the direction of sports. That's not going to change. I think at WFAN, as long as Mike and Chris are around, they'll be able to get away with the old style that they've been doing for 19 or 20 years. But this is the way the market is evolving. This is the way our medium is evolving. And you can't stick your head in the sand and say, we're not going to do it that way, because eventually, when you lose an Imus and you lose a Mike and a Chris, you're going to have to move along with the time. So whether you like it or not is not the issue. The bottom line is that blogging, instant messages, that type of thing exists, and it exists bigger now than ever.
Well, I mean, the Opie and Anthony, same thing. I mean, they went through there, and then you have this other politically correct side of the coin that keeps trying to, like, whack-a-mole everybody out of there. And the thing is, you need personalities, like I said, these new messengers that are not going to be sort of one-dimensional and sort of like, you know, just here for the game, that they're going to be, their lives are going to be called into question just as much as the people that they're talking about. And Sid, you're self-evident of that. I mean, there hasn't been one bump in the road that you've endured that hasn't had some public light shed on it.
Right.
And that actually humanizes you to the audience. It actually makes you feel like, hey, you know, this guy might have a microphone in front of his face in the morning, but he goes through the same crap. He's got a mortgage and kids and a hassle. And it's almost like that, like I said, that fourth wall is gone. Between, you know, you used to never know, like Harry saying over there, you didn't know these, like, even in the 50s they covered these guys up a lot, and now it's actually the opposite. Now it's they dig and dig and dig, they invent stuff, they throw things out, see what sticks to the wall, and they sort of play all the way around the corner, 360 degrees. You're going back to the same point as why are people watching, and it comes down to it, does it stimulate, does it entertain, does it get my interest, and the only way sometimes to sustain it is sort of that slimy angle. And like I said before, you know, we had a presidential huge impeachment thing over a stained dress broke by the freaking Drudge Report. So it's like, you know, it isn't always the mainstream guys that are gonna, you know, the guys we trust, so to speak, that are gonna be the ones that step up. And if you remember back in the wake of 9/11, FAN did an unbelievably better job than some of the mainstream guys, because they were human. These guys had families, and they had they stayed on the air. I don't know how long I stayed on the air that day. Connecting with their audience, because the people wanted to talk to the ones that are in their lives every day.
Yeah.
Sid knows doing drive time. You got a relationship with those people. And Howard
did
that 25, 30 years ago.
No, there's no doubt. There's no doubt. And, you know, you bring up the Imus thing on 9/11. I was in the studios that day, guys. I'll never forget it. 9/10, 9/9 was actually the start of the football season. But 9/10, the Monday night, the night before, the Giants opened up the season in Denver against the Broncos. And, in fact, the Giants got killed that day. Brian Griese had a big game for the Broncos. And that was a game where Ed McCaffrey, the former Giant wide receiver, ripped his knee up and was never the same. And I was on the air with Imus, and he was busting my chops, as he usually did, because he wanted to know why I would sit around watching a Giant game or go to a Giant game wearing a jersey. He would always say to me, why are you wearing that Piazza jersey at the Shady? You think you're going to play today? So he was always busting my balls about that, and as that was going on, that's when the first plane hit. And you're right, in the end, FAN did a very good job. But don't forget, Imus is still a news show. This is not Mike and Mike. This is not, you know, Imus is still a news show, so he had the capability of doing that. The other people that stepped up tremendously, Susan Waldman at the time, I had not replaced her yet. I replaced her actually 3 months after 9/11. She did a very good job. Mike and Chris had a couple of comments, as I look back, that were somewhat ignorant, to be quite frank, but for the most part, they were very human, did a pretty good job. So you're right. The station set up and did a pretty nice job there. But that really comes back to the fact that there's a lot of smart hosts. Don Imus, Mike Francesa. For as much abuse as Chris Russo takes for being the king of malaprops and screwing up names and screwing up words here and there, he's not a stupid guy by any stretch. So they got some really bright people there. They've got some people who know what they're doing on the air, and they did a terrific job there. And you're right. As a morning guy, when I go to work in the morning and when I'm on the air in the morning and guys are going to work, I'm not embarrassed to talk about my two stints at rehab or the fact that I, you know, I've had trouble with drinks, with drinking and drugs and gambling and all the things that people have problems with every single day. So I'm with you. You know, you use the word humanizing. Sometimes it's humiliating. You know, a lot of people hold that stuff against me. You know, I've been called everything from a loser to a low life. You know, guys like Phil Mushnick called me a low life continuously, and Waisman gave me a tough time. But you know what? That all comes with it, and as long as they spell my name right, it's basically the way I felt for most of the publicity I got up here in New York.
Now, Harry, just to spin it back, because this is your side of the coin, entertainers deal with critics all the time, their whole life. They deal with critics, and their biggest critic usually is themselves. From working with guys like Mankow and Howard, that have to endure extreme acceptance and extreme criticism. I mean, to the 10th degree of what any one of us would have to deal with. What is it like on the inside of that circle when that kind of stuff's going on, when you have a controversy going on, like a Howard leaving Terrestrial Radio, and your contact with them is like bringing characters and stuff on the air, like you started the show talking like you're A-Rod. You know, what is it like for those guys to have to basically become sort of a hard shell because, like Sid says, it's unbearably humiliating. You can't get out of the light. Like, it's nice when it's A-Rod and you can talk about that situation over there, but when it's happening to you and you got to go on the air, like even Chris talking about his contract the last couple of weeks, you know, with Mike not there, it's been difficult for him. You could see him on Yes. He's straining. He's like, I don't want to talk about this, but he has to. So how do you think the entertainers, like guys like Howard and people like Mancow, how do they insulate themselves from that kind of stuff, or do they? Or they just, you know, get an ulcer and go to therapy a lot?
I think they momentarily get affected, and then they regain themselves. I mean, I think they do get affected. Like, look at Jon Stewart breaking down and all these different hosts during 9/11, but then they regain their composure. They become impervious because they dwell in that nether world of darkness and evil and destruction so long that they're impervious to it even in their own life. I
would say this. I would tend to agree with that, and I'm actually in town right now doing something for Howard Stern tomorrow. I'm going to host Whack Pack Bowling, so I got to know Howard just a little, not as much as you, obviously, but the thing that I would say with guys like Howard compared to a guy like me is, yeah, it hits him for a second, and then doesn't matter. You know why? He's not going anywhere. You know, when somebody writes something horrible about me in the papers, which they did a million times, or FAN gets flack from some of the advertisers about Sid Rosenberg, Sid Rosenberg is not making $1.5 million, $2 million, or in Howard's case, $100 million a year, where a company like Westwood One or Infinity, or even Sirius with Mel Karmazin, where they're willing to take the hit. So if Howard Stern or if Mike Francesa or if Chris Russo or Mancow gets abused in the papers, they shove it off because they are bigger than their companies. A guy like me, you know, I'm making a nice salary, but nothing exorbitant. I can get fired. So it's a little different. Howard Stern, he's going to wipe that off like, hey, you know what? He's larger than any one company. He's the king of all media. He's the greatest of all time. Mike Francesa, they're not going to get in trouble. Me, Sid Rosenberg, I have a couple of bad write-ups like I did. I'm going to lose my job.
Oh, yeah. What happens when it hits the beach of someone like Imus, like last year, and he's got like this full scale, you know, the firestorm going on that affects his charity, his whole base of operations, everything he's trying to do happens. And you were there the morning that it happened, the whole Rutgers
thing. Yeah, I was, wasn't I?
Yeah, of course you were, Sid. Come on, I mean, this is your MO with Imus. Every time you showed up, there was another, you know, basically a media napalm event. So that
yeah,
morning, I remember that morning, I saw it happen. And you hear it in one ear, and you're kind of going around the room. And I had MSNBC on, and I kind of chuckled, walked around the room, and I turned around, and I said, that might be bad. And then it was like 2 days later, he's getting grilled on the Today Show. And I really thought, if I was going to play that card, you know, about the contract later in the lawsuit, which is what he did, why didn't he just read from his contract right to those guys? Hey, listen, you guys are paying me to say controversial, off-color stuff, and then you're going to go cry because... Yeah, well, that was the thing. That was his kryptonite. He said something racist, and that's become the new kryptonite for free speech. You can't say something that's even insinuating it.
It's a chokehold on America right now, which is why America is screwing up right now big time because of political correctness and our attitudes towards racism.
Yep.
So what?
No, you're right.
That morning, right after that show, Sid, was there like basically like a closed door meeting? You guys go into like,
no,
you know,
no. Nothing could be further from the truth. You know, I still see that clip every now and then. It was funny, you know, last week they were doing something, when I just got in trouble again for Pac-Man Jones, and thank God I was nowhere near that show that day, but they were talking about the Pac-Man Jones thing, and they replayed the Rutgers thing, and it's still, I'm not going to lie to you guys, you know, Nightline and Barbara Walters and all these people to play the clip and to see Sid Rosenberg 7-9 the ticket at the bottom is kind of funny even to this day, but I'll tell you exactly what happened, guys. That was a Wednesday morning. We all got involved in that conversation. Chris Carlin was out. He was sick. So Mark Chernoff had called me to fill in doing sports that day. To be quite frank, guys, that was really me on my way back. My agent and Mark Chernoff had already been in discussion about bringing me back full-time. If Imus never made those Rutgers comments and never got fired last April, I would be back at the Fan right now. I mean, there was already contract talk. It was, you know, you may remember I did about 30 shows with Imus before the Rutgers incident. That was not an accident.
The whole way, guys.
It was. I mean, I'm not going to say anything about Evan Roberts because chances are he may still be there, but I was going to be back in a bigger role than just Imus. Let's just leave it at that. But with that said, we left the show that morning. We didn't think anything of it. Next day, Thursday morning, Chernoff called me early, said, could you fill in for Carlin again today? I said, no problem. We did the show on Thursday. Friday, Friday I did not work, but that Saturday afternoon, I was doing a three-hour afternoon show on Saturday, which is going to be my first show in over 2 years by myself outside of Imus. And it wasn't until Saturday morning at 5:45 a.m., I'm sleeping in Florida with my wife, the phone rings, it's Mark Chernoff, He said, did you see today's New York Times? I said, no. He said, maybe you want to read it. And at that point, it took me off the Saturday afternoon show, and that's when the proverbial crap hit the fan. But literally, guys, for 2 or 3 days, we thought nothing of it. Nobody said a word about it.
Yeah.
There was no, you know, when I said the Venus Williams thing and I got fired and suspended in 2001, literally 5 minutes after that, there was a storm. You know, there was a storm 5 minutes after. This thing with Rutgers took a couple of days to brew. Media Matters got it. Al Sharpton got it a couple of days later. And eventually, that story became much bigger than it should have been. As I often said, that was a week before the Virginia Tech massacre, that animal who killed those students on campus. If that animal kills those students at Virginia Tech the week before, Don Imus is still at WFAN.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying. That's how volatile these sort of little, it was a, they, he got caught in that slow news cycle. But I still think when he had that FaceTime on the Today Show, and this is something that Mike's seen with athletes when they do the mea culpa, you know, especially with Clemens and stuff. There almost is like a, I don't know if when the media has to talk to the media, when you have to talk to, you like when you have to go and meet the press or something like that, when you do something that's sort of front and center that the media itself respects. Like, I guess 8 o'clock hour on Today Show, that's like the big advertising hour on the Today Show. So they have Imus on simulcasting, and basically he's apologized. He must have said he was sorry 500 times, and it was never going to be enough. And Al Sharpton, for some reason, has, you know, his audience is his audience, and for the most part, Imus basically let that whole thing sort of slide on, I'm a good guy, I do good things, instead of just saying, hey, when this is all gone, you guys aren't talking about me, going to be lawyers in the back room looking at my contract, and this is what it said. So if you're going to put me on this sort of a leash, and you're going to have this sort of a reaction to every little thing I say, I can't do my show. This is why Howard left terrestrial radio in the first place. And then
Howard could afford to do it. Look, Don, guys, I'm just going to say it to you as frank as I can say it. Don Imus was scared. Amazing that a man who's making $10-12 million a year and who has a tremendous amount of power, and he doesn't have the listenership, nor does he have the talent, by the way, of a Howard Stern. He's not even close. I'm the first to say that. But in terms of being a powerful radio guy, I guess next to Rush Limbaugh maybe and Sean Hannity, Imus is right there. But he was scared, you know, and the race thing is a scary thing. It happened to me in 2001. It happened to Imus. He was on the cover of Time magazine years and years ago as the racist of the year. So he knew, you know, there's a lot of things you can get away with, but this one was going to be rough, and once Sharpton gets involved, even though I don't know why that's the case, because every African-American person I speak to on and off my radio show readily admits that Al Sharpton is not the voice piece for black people. In fact, most black people can't stand Al Sharpton,
no,
but for some reason...
Idiot.
Exactly.
Yeah,
I couldn't have said it better. But for
idiot.
Some reason... Right. And Jesse Jackson, too, by the way, was all over Barack Obama right now, which is kind of funny as well. But the point is that black people don't accept Al Sharpton as the mouthpiece, yet white people do. And if, God forbid, something goes on and he's standing in front of your doors when you go to work in the morning, you're fucked.
Yeah, and
how,
also,
how do you think he makes money? He extorts companies.
And wasn't
to,
that the same week as the Radiothon too?
The Radiothon for Don?
Yeah, they did that. Wasn't it, like after that controversy with Rutgers, the next week I think was the Radiothon, and
correct. They took him off. They took him off before the second day, which is ironic because for all the abuse that Imus takes, and some of it is absolutely legitimate. Believe me, I was at 5 o'clock in the morning with Imus for 6 years, and some of the abuse is legitimate. But truth be told, the Radiothon that he does and the money he raises for SIDS and the money he raises for kids with cancer is he does a good job there. You know, and there's a lot of talk about Imus and his ranch, and that's fine. But truth be told, he does have a couple of decent bones in his body, and it's ironic that was the time they decided to take him off the air when he's raising money for kids with cancer.
Yeah, and that's what I said. There was a lot of, like, you saw all the layers there. You saw the public reaction. You saw the racist bell being rung, and then the mainstream media attacking him, and basically the suits, the CBSs and the corporate suits.
Well, the other thing is this.
The advertisers dropping out, and then they bleed.
The other thing is this, not just the advertisers, but, and I saw this front and center. I know you guys can agree to this, that people don't like him. You know, listen, if Howard Stern ever got into trouble, and he wouldn't because Howard's too smart for that, and like I said, he's larger than life, but you would see an amazing amount of people, powerful people, the guy on the street, standing out there and defending Howard. When Imus got in trouble, it was like, hey, where are my friends, man? You know, like
that's the most popular guy in the world.
Right, exactly.
Right, right.
He's not a likable guy. It's like Barry Bonds, guys. I mean, you could take one baseball player, he'll do steroids for 8 years, and people will still like him. You know, I am convinced that Mike Piazza did steroids for all those great years with the Dodgers and the Mets. But people like Mike Piazza. You take Barry Bonds, he does the same thing, and they hate Barry Bonds. It's the same thing with Imus. He's not likable.
Yeah.
So when he got into trouble like that, nobody was rallying to defend the guy.
Well, Giambi admits it. Giambi admits he's a steroid.
Right.
They got everyone at
right.
the stadium wearing mustaches today.
Exactly, exactly. So there is a likability factor, I think, that goes into play. Don't you guys agree?
Sure. I mean, it always comes down to the person. Sure. I mean, that's what I'm saying. We're dealing with guys like that. Imus made no bones about it. When he came up in the industry, he cut every bridge and burned every bridge he could. And it was, no need to be nice on the way up because you're not going down theory. And when he needed them, like the Tim Russes of the world, they wouldn't want to get within 10 feet of him at the time.
I think part of the reason is that Imus wears a mask and he's not genuine, he's not real, he's just playing art, whereas Howard Stern is real and genuine, and he's just flaw and all. He's bearing it all.
See, that's a fair point, too. That's a very, very fair point.
He's wearing a mask.
Yeah, and Imus's mask, by the way, Imus's mask lots of times was a mask of Sid Rosenberg and a mask of Bernard McGurk. Lots of times we would say things that Imus wanted to say, but he just didn't say it because he knew it would get himself into trouble. Howard doesn't have that fear. Howard's not waiting for Artie Lang or for Jackie Martling or for Fred Norris to say something. If Howard thinks something is funny or controversial, he's going to say it. Imus has gotten to the point where he's so damn skittish that he relied on people like me and Bernie McGurk to say it. Now I took my beat and I'm out of there now. So now he's going to have to live with his own message.
Well, like I said,
in hindsight, didn't it work out for you? I mean, you got a chance to have autonomy now. And, I mean, do something that, I mean, you wouldn't be able to do this show on The Fan, what you're doing now, don't you think?
That is a great point. You're 100% right. I would not be able to do it. I can't tell you guys how many days I spent in the office of really Eric Spitz, more than Chernoff. Chernoff knew that because I worked on the Imus show that I was going to do a little more than just sports, but Spitz couldn't stand that about me, and Eric and I never got along. But you're 100% right. I could not do the show I do down in Florida on The Fan. With that said, by the way, if a tremendous opportunity came my way and it was just a straight sports talk, whether it's The Fan or some other station in New York or some other station anywhere in the country, I am capable and willing to do it. But everything being equal, money being equal, markets being equal, I would much rather be doing what I'm doing now. That's a fair statement, yes.
Yeah. So all your general managers out there listening to the show, you can Sid's his email box is open if you want to.
I'm expensive though, guys. I'm not cheap. I mean, that's the other thing. I've had two people tell me the last couple of weeks. I'd love to have you, man, but you're kind of expensive. I'm expensive. Come on. I'm nothing compared to the big guns in this business. I'm nothing.
Radio's always been that way. It's always been, that's why I haven't heard anyone that works at The Fan that got along with Spitz. By the way, I'm looking for him like waiting for Godot. Everyone gives Spitz a grief. He's sort of the Gestapo over there behind the scenes, it seems. I don't know.
Chernoff is the one that gets the bad public rep, because if you read, and I go back to the message, I'll give them a plug, that MikeFrancesa.com message board, these guys, they're all basically listeners. I mean, they're the ones bashing Chernoff. I mean, and Sid's on there, so he's probably saw some of the things they wrote. They blame Chernoff for a lot of the bad radio, and I think they go a little overboard sometimes, but you guys kind of shed some light on it. It may not be only one guy's fault. There's a lot of chiefs over there, and in a guinea pig company, there's a lot of chiefs. So, I mean,
there's a lot of guys that have input over there. It's not just Cherney. Eric's actually a real nice guy, and his wife is very nice. But he comes from the school where he wants it to be. He wants it to be baseball all day. Dog was complaining today that he wants to do more tennis talk after Wimbledon. For me, I would have brought on at least one guest. That was one of the greatest matches I've ever seen. And Eric Spitz would much rather have you talk to, the bat boy. If the Mets are playing the Giants, talk baseball with anybody. And that's fine. Listen, that's how FAN has made their money. That's their bread and butter. So I'm not going to argue with Eric. Eric is a smart guy. He's a good company guy. And he knows what's successful. So Spitz and Chernoff have done a great job for that station for a long time. I'm not here to kill those guys. But I am a guy that occasionally, more than occasionally, had philosophical differences, and in the end, I don't miss those days.
Now, I don't know if you know, Sid, Chernoff cut off a caller today on Mad Dog, and he actually took exception to it. It was Al from White Plains, because he was bringing up the fact that he was accusing Chernoff of trying to get Evan into the midday, and Mad Dog didn't like that Chernoff cut the call off on him.
I heard a call earlier, too, that was talking about the Mike and the Dog situation, and I guess Chernoff gets uncomfortable with that too, and I can't blame him for that. And
yeah,
I don't know if Chernoff, I don't know if Chernoff is really back there cutting those calls off. Sometimes Dog will say that, theater of the mind, and Dog is great with that. I'm not even sure, guys, if that's really true. That could easily have not have happened, and Dog was just saying that to cause some problems back at the station and kind of rile people up. But there are things that that the guys back at the station are definitely uncomfortable with, and that would be one of them. So if it did turn out to be true, it wouldn't surprise me. But it also would not surprise me if I found out that Chernoff did not do that, and that was just Dog starting some trouble.
Well, Friday 105 is going to be must listen radio for anyone that's a fan of that show because
I don't think so. I think you're all going to be very, very disappointed. I think it's going to be business as usual. I think that they're going to limit the amount of phone calls from listeners that are going to be able to call up and find out the nitty-gritty. I think what they'll do is they'll come on the air like Mike did a couple of weeks ago and kind of set the table. Hey, look, you know, this is the way it is. You know, we don't really talk on vacation. We've never done it for 19 years. Things are not perfect here. And let's talk about the All-Star game. Let's talk Mets and Yankees, and we'll talk about this later. I really believe that they will do everything to defuse it rather than ride that. I think people will be disappointed if they're looking for a Mike and a Mad Dog going at each other or fans getting them all riled up. I think they'll try to defuse that on Friday.
Well, as they say, stay tuned for that.
Which, by the way, would be a major mistake if they did that. I would advise them. It's not my job, of course, and this is one of those philosophical differences, but I would advise Mike and Chris to kill each other on Friday and let every single phone call deal with their relationship because that would be great radio, not listening to a replay of Jerry Manuel. But that's just me.
I'm with you.
In the Mad Dog. That's what we got to see. Sit in the Mad Dog from 1 to 6:30.
They've been promoting it as Mike or the Mad Dog for about 2 weeks, you know, and we'll see what happens on Friday. So, all right, guys, we're winding down. I just want to get once around the horn here, start with Harry. What's the biggest misconception that you think your industry, the character industry, things that you're doing in comedy, things that you're doing that basically are a part of the morning drive radio? What do you think the biggest misconception is about it behind the scenes, like that people would want to know that they maybe have an idea about that you want to straighten them out about?
That it's fun.
That it's fun.
Yeah, exactly. That it's, you know, I mean, it's work like anything else. You know, it's work like anything else. That's the bottom line.
People think, like I said, they think that you guys have to say more often than not that this isn't really a job. I come in, I talk, whatever. I mean,
that is a brilliant answer. God, Harry, you're brilliant, man. That is a great answer.
Yeah.
I'm just being straightforward. That's all. You know, I'm just being real.
And Mike, what would you say about that? As far as you know, getting prepared for a show, things. What do you think of the things that people, the fans, think that you want to straighten them out about?
Well, I'm not a pro like Sid. I'm on a 1,000-watt station and I do internet radio. But people think this is easy. And I'll tell you what, I was one of those when I was a listener. Doing a show, whether it's 1 hour or 5.5 hours, you got to give them credit. It's really tough, especially when you
very
have
tough.
To fill 5.5. It's very tough and. Sometimes it does bother me, although I take it in stride when you read a message board and, you know, they'll piss on you and they'll say this, that, and sometimes I just want to say, just try it once and actually try to get a guest of any noteworthy because, you know, they'll get on my case. Well, you know, you had Danny Heap on the other day. Well, you know what? It took me 2 weeks to get him because, you know, these guys actually, if it's not WFAN, they're not exactly lining up to talk to you on their time. So try doing it once. And if you can do it better than me, God bless you. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, and then we'll wrap up with Sid. Because Sid, Sid, thanks for coming on a little blog talk, you know, pop fun fart show here. But what would you say is the number one misconception about you personally that the fans might have an idea about that you want to kind of like, you know, shed some light on here so that they understand you a little more?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you guys for having me on, and Harry and Mike and you guys, great, man. But I think the biggest misconception about me is I'm a bad guy. Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people out there that think I'm a bad guy, and I said some bad things, and I said some irresponsible things, and I've apologized for them. I've been fired for them. I've been humiliated for them. I've lost my house. I've had to move from one state to another. I mean, I really, you know, unlike Imus and the rest of these people who get a little bump in the road, get a $13 million contract, like my life has been turned upside down 5 or 6 times. And while I readily admit I've said some things on the air that are offensive and hurtful, people think I'm a bad guy. I'm anything but that. My wife is pregnant with my second child. I have more fans at the Fan now. I'm out of that station full-time for 3.5 years. You talk to every guy at that station outside of Craig Carton and everybody at that station, and we still have a great relationship. So I think that's the biggest misconception. You know, people think that what you say on the radio, that's you. And every once in a while, that's the case. But every once in a while, you're on there for 4.5, 5 hours a day like I am, and you're going to say something irresponsible that doesn't necessarily mean that you're a bad guy. So to me, that's what I would tell people, that I've said some silly things along the way, but the amount of hours and time I spent on the radio the last 10 years, most of it's actually pretty good.
Well, listen, guys, this is a great hour. It went fast. I want to thank you all for coming. Harry from Electric Eel Entertainment and Harry Varian and Mike Silver from New York Baseball Digest and, of course, the great Sid Rosenberg from 790 The Ticket, SidRosenberg.com. Thanks for joining us here on Naked Soma, guys. I'll get you guys the link.
Pleasure.
You can spread it all over the place. And you guys have a good week. Enjoy the All-Star game. And I guess let the games begin, right?
Thank
you, gentlemen. It was fun. Take care, guys.
Bye.
Baseball, American apple pie. Ew.
Take it easy, Eric.
And masturbation, too. All right. Take care.
One more Howard shot. All right.
All right. Bye, guys.
Is there anything left to say?
Yeah.
Do we have
a
minute?
That was it. We have 16 seconds.
All right, then. Next week, I don't know what the frig we're talking about, but go to Naked Soma and at the Blog Talk stop there, and what the heck is there? blogtalkradio.com/Naked Soma, whatever. And we'll figure it out. Travel light, everybody.
Bye.